Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this meeting of the Planning Committee. I'm the Chairman, Councillor Pauline Hazel. To begin the meeting, there are a few matters of housekeeping. Action in the event of an emergency. There are no practice alarms planned for this evening, so if an alarm sounds, please evacuate the Town Hall by going down the main staircase or the back staircase to the High Street and then to the car park behind the Town Hall in St Ronald Street. This meeting is being audio recorded for live broadcast over the internet on the Council's website and will also be available to listen to afterwards. Introductions. Members of the committee will introduce themselves, starting with the Deputy Chairman, who is on my right, and the rest of the committee who are sitting opposite.
Councillor Brian Jarvis, Lexton and Brayswick Ward.
Good evening, Chairman, and good evening, listeners at home. Councillor Dave Harris, deputising for Councillor Chris Pearson.
Cyril Liddy, Wivenhoe Ward.
Councillor Teresa Higgins, Newtown and Christchurch Ward.
Lynn Barton, Shrubend Ward.
Derek Loveland, Tiptree Ward.
Vic Flores, Shrubend Ward.
Paul Dundas, Stanway Ward, substituting for Councillor Jackie McLean.
Councillor Philip Oxford, Howards Ward.
In attendance are planning officers Chris Harden and Simon Cairns. Amanda Chidgey is here for procedural matters. Please would speakers use microphones at all times and speak directly into the microphone as this activates the audio recording. Members of the committee may use electronic devices to access their meeting papers and visitors are welcome to use mobile phones and other devices, including cameras, but please use them discreetly, set them to silent and do not use voice or camera flash functions. We may have a break at 8 o'clock, subject to the items remaining. There are toilets on every floor in the building. There is an induction loop in this room. This is a quasi-judicial committee which makes decisions based on material planning considerations, following the laws of the land and policies of the council. If the committee is minded to refuse an application, members will use such considerations that will stand up in a court of law. The material planning considerations are listed in the committee's agenda. Has everyone who wishes to speak registered their name? If not, please do so now.
Chairman, no one else is indicating.
If anyone has a petition they wish to present to me on the item on the agenda this evening, please do so now.
Chairman, no one else is indicating.
There are no urgent items. Declarations of interest. Councillors, are there any declarations of interest? None, thank you. We now have to confirm as a correct record the minutes of the meetings held on the 1st and the 18th of October 2018. Do you agree? Thank you. We have just one item on the agenda this evening, which is planning application 171396, Knights Farm Chapel. We have two speakers speaking against and two speakers for. So I would now like to ask Mr. Harden if he will present this agenda item to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, the application is at Knights Farm at Swan Street Chapel, and the description is as on the screen in the report, basically a retrospective application for for various works at the site, including Factory 1 part and Factory 2, Factory 3, and other ancillary items such as office, biomass, store, warehouse, porter cabins, containers, tray area, smoking shelter, fencing and entrance gates. And this is all in relation to the use as a meat wholesaler and meat processing plant. And there's an associated retrospective change of use of the agricultural land and the retention of existing vehicular parking, landscaping and infrastructure works, including a clodgester unit and a water purifier. There are two attenuation ponds proposed and also a small canopy proposed on one of the factory buildings. The site lies within the countryside and it is between Chapel and Great Tay. I'll just take you through the photographs and site plans. This shows its proximity in relation to the A12 and the Wakes Cone. And you see the red marker there is the site. You see Great Tay is to the south, Chapel is to the north, Eight Ash Green down there to the east. This is a closer view showing the proximity of the site in red. That's not the site shape, but that's just to clarify where it is. You see Swan Street and Chapel there to the north. And this is the site's location plan outlined in red. And this shows the proximity of buildings nearby. You'll note the blue buildings on that plan are listed buildings. This is an aerial photograph of the site that was sent in, and this shows dated to 2018 aerial view. You can see the factory buildings, parking area, some landscaping around it, and the main Swan Street next to it with the access in that concrete area just off Swan Street. This is a plan showing the site as existed in 2001, which was also sent in, so I've put that in as a comparison to what is there now. And that slide will be repeated later on the presentation. So this shows the overall context of the site. This is an extract from the landscape statement. You see the site there and the way the land falls towards it to the west there. Councillors have visited the site and looked around the front, inside the site and around to the rear. This is a view looking into the site, the access way. This is where the gate would slide across when it's closed. You can see Factory 1 to the rear there. This is a view looking down Swan Street, showing vegetation at the front of the site. Also note the vegetation opposite. Further down on the right there is one of the listed buildings, which I referred to, Willow Cottage. And I'll just take you through some photographs of the site to remind you what the site looks like. And for those who haven't visited, you can see. So that's Factory 1 looking in into the site. This is a view to the east of the site, showing the public footpath that runs alongside the site. And to so the site is to the left. And you can see some planting and screening to the left with the fields rolling higher up to the rear of the rear of this photograph. This is a view of the rear of the site from the footpath to the rear, the corner of the field, public right of way 126. So you see some screening in front, but you also see that at the time this photograph was taken in March, the tops of Factory 1 and part of Factory 2 are visible, also a bit of the workshop building. So that's rear view of the site. And another view of the site from footpath 12610. So back into the site, this is the parking area adjacent to the front boundary of the site. Note the planting in front. And that's the end of Factory Building 1. within the site. And this is the car parking area to the rear. You'll note there are elements of the landscape that are open at that particular point, or a bit more open than most of the site, and that's where some additional planting is proposed. That's a picture of the Clar Jester, and I'll show you where that is on the plan. So that's to the east of the site. Workshop buildings and biomass. This is part of Factory 1, where some of the concern has been raised about noise from plant. So I'll just take you through the site location now. So this shows the factory buildings there. You'll note Factory 1, 2, 3, the office building, workshops, biomass store, and the parking is to the top right, at the very top of the screen, and you'll see the attenuation pond up there as well. And then the other attenuation basin is down in the bottom left of the screen. Swan Street is to the right. So that'll be to the east, actually. So north is the right of way, northeast right of way, the top of the screen. And that's a similar drawing showing hard surfacing. And this shows the parking layout, and you'll note there are 67 spaces shown within the site. And here are some elevations of the buildings proposed. That's Factory 1 and Factory 3. You'll see they're relatively modest in height terms. This is Factory 2. And this is the office and biomass store. And then pictures of the warehouse within the site. And here are the porter cabins, the smoking shelters, container tray areas, etc. All within that plan I showed earlier. This is a view of the entrance gate and entrance way. And then just quickly take you through the Clar Jester treatment plants, and then the eastern attenuation basin and the western attenuation basin. So I'll just take you through some more photographs before we get into the base of the report. I think it's best to show these now. These are some photographs of elements of the road network, pinch points that have been taken by objectors and forwarded to us. Members visited the site and went in either direction along these roads. So you see there are pinch points there and a lorry going through one of the pinch points at Chapel. And a picture of an articulated lorry coming out of the site, basically. Articulated lorry movements have caused a lot of concern, as have HG movements and other vehicle movements. So that shows the size of vehicle and the relationship to the size of the road and the access. So just a reminder, showing two slides at once, showing 2018 plan, 2001 plan. Obviously, 2018, a lot more buildings and more hard surfacing. Having said that, there's also a lot more landscaping in the 2018 aerial view. And I'll just show you basically, briefly, drawings of a previous history. This is 1995. So this bit here is the site at the time of the approval of the 1995 application, as referred to in the history of the site. And that shows obviously a lot smaller site at the time, and that would have been for the change of use existing building to storage and wholesale of meat. And that was what existed at the time. So you see the car park, tea rooms, picnic area, and growing areas to the top of that drawing. Closer view of the building in question. And then the later application, 1999, referred to in the report. So you see this site has expanded a bit at that point. Shows the access and vehicle movements into it. So that's for use of the main building from the shop and restaurant to wholesale meat business. Show various elements that were to be removed at the time of that application. So those dotted lines at the top were proposed to be removed. Okay, I'll just take you back now to the proposed drawing. So that's the proposed layout. So in terms of consultations, we've received a couple of extra comments that have come in after the committee report was prepared and after the amendment sheet. And I'll just go through those shortly. Just to confirm that on the amendment sheet, there are extra comments that were received, again, after the committee report, but in time to be included on the amendment sheet. And those have been made available to the councillors. So the extra comments that have come in after that, I'll go through now. The first letter I will summarise, and that essentially goes through the lengthy history of the site, referring to original agricultural occupancy condition of the dwelling adjacent, and the consent that was sought about the retail sale of meat, and that the business over time spilled over into other areas with the ancillary meat business. And it confirms that the council at the time tried to strike a balance between assisting a small rural business and safeguarding the harmful impacts on the environment for the local residents. Further detail of the history is outlined, and essentially that is covered in my committee report, planning history section. It does refer to complaints received by enforcement officers. And it goes on to say that it looks like more concessions are being repeated in 2018, that planning control and conditions were ineffective in the past, and that this potentially has been deemed as intentional unauthorised development and deceit over the years. And essentially it indicates that the application should be considered as if it had not been begun at all, so judging with a blank sheet. There's reference to policy DP9 and that it conflicts with policy DP9 and CE1 in that the development is not small scale and also conflicts with the other criterion DP9. It also refers to the site opposite where planning permission for two houses was recently refused on the grounds of it not being sustainable. It refers to the traffic impact assessment and that this is not accurate. Those comments are already in the committee report. It reiterates that the proposal has been looked at from the wrong perspective and has not been assessed objectively or in a robust or balanced way, and that the proposal should therefore be refused in the grounds of public interest. So that's the summary of the first objection. The second objection is briefer, and this says that does not consider you're listening to residents and why they object. The applicant has positively deceived the council, and you're ignoring this and the evidence that on the balance of probabilities he has. So that is the consultations completed. So moving now to planning considerations, Just need to point out that at the start of the report there's reference to a policy CE2, but that should be CE1. That's a typo carried across from the conclusion. In the main bulk of the report, that is referred to as CE1. So the wording in relation to that is correct. That should be a 1 instead of a 2. So in terms of the principle of the application, the proposal accords with the National Planning Policy Framework, which places significant weight on supporting local economic growth and productivity, and aims to support prosperous rural economy. This MPPF is more up to date than our local plans, so should be given considerable weight. As outlined in the report, the proposal does comply with the majority of policy DP9, and there are material reasons why there should be an allowance to depart from the one part of the policy that relates to small scale, as I've outlined in the committee report. The reasons for that is it does support the rural economy, highly beneficial to the area in terms of providing employment, and in effect it does comply with the MPPF in its entirety, and overall we consider the proposal should be judged on its planning merits for those reasons outlined in the committee report first section. So we therefore move on to the planning merits of the case. And in terms of landscape impact, that is deemed acceptable. The site is generally well screened in the countryside. I'll just take you to the aerial photographs. And that shows the amount of landscaping that is around the site, all along the front, side and rear boundaries. And as you saw from the site visit, you can glimpse it a little from the rear, but apart from that and looking through the access way, it is well hidden in the landscape. There can be some extra planting to the rear of the site down here, as I showed in the photographs. And there will be a landscape management plan condition applied to control retention of trees and to ensure extra planting and that it's managed over time. So that condition is outlined in the committee report. So overall, in terms of landscape impact, we consider the site as exists is acceptable. Now, turning to the highway safety and traffic issues, we consider that judging the vehicle movements and the nature of the use and the roads, the road network surrounding, that the scheme is acceptable in this respect, subject to the stringent conditions as outlined in the committee report. It's considered that we do need to, in particular, minimise the number of articulated lorries visiting the site, because as shown in that picture before, there are pinch points, and whilst the road is not restricted in terms of weight, it certainly would be beneficial to minimise the amount of articulated lorries visiting the site in relation to this business. So that condition would basically envisage that there would be no more than an average of one articulated lorry per day visiting the site on an average monthly period. So occasionally there might be, for example, two on one day and none the next day, but on average it should not be more than one per day. There'll need to be monitoring of that in terms of recording lorries that visit the site. That can be done by a log and also by CCTV recording. That condition would be monitored by the council, and also we would have the right to ask for the logs and see the CCTV footage when requested. So it should be noted there are no objections from the Highways Authority. That less than 25% of the HGV vehicle movements using Swan Street relate to this site. We can add some directional signage along the frontage of the site, so that there is a better chance of lorries not passing the site and then having to reverse. That was one point that was raised by objectors, where sometimes a lorry will go past the access point and then we'll have to reverse in or reverse down the road. So we want to minimise the potential for that as much as possible. So the aim would be to have some signage on the front, a bit more than is already, but that it would need to be discreet to avoid being too dominating on the front, but just adequate to help access into that site. You'll note from the recommendation in the MPPF that permission should only be refused on highway grounds if the cumulative impacts on the road network are severe, and in this case the impact on the road network are not considered to be severe. In terms of parking manoeuvring space, there is adequate provision within the site. I showed you the parking plan, which shows manoeuvring space for the articulated lorries and parking areas throughout the site, and that's considered adequate to meet the requirements of the business and the needs of staff, delivery vehicles and vans, etc. So overall, on highway and traffic impact grounds, the proposal is considered acceptable. The comments from neighbours and residents and the parish council have been considered very carefully in that respect, and hence a lot of time has been spent analysing vehicle movements and numbers and also applying stringent conditions to control the situation. So turning now to drainage and flood issues. It's not considered to be a drainage or flood problem, subject again to conditions as outlined in the report. And this will require the submission of a full drainage scheme and a management and maintenance of those plans. So again, that'll be carefully controlled. And no objections have been received from the Essex County Council SUDS team in that respect, or from the Environment Agency. Environment Agency have recently visited the site and have taken measurements of the water quality at the stream, the rear of the site. They previously visited it and they found that there were high ammonia levels. They've now visited it again in September, and the levels in the site are now satisfactory. So there's not a problem in terms of contamination of that stream, because that was one issue raised by a nearby resident, that the stream was getting contaminated and was contaminating their pond and killing off fish. So we've had an environmental agency officer go out and check that, and that's come out as okay at the present time. In terms of vegetation and trees, it's not considered there's a significant impact on trees. Obviously, the scheme is retrospective, but I think looking at the state of the site at the time of the early 2000s, important trees are few and far between, and they're mainly on the rear boundary, and those have been unaffected by this development. There's been a lot of extra planting, but from that photograph you can see that there are no trees essentially that would warrant retention or of importance that have been affected by this application and by the works that have continued. So our tree officer has analysed the plans and has not raised objections, but we do want conditions to preserve trees there and to also protect trees from work when they're putting in the attenuation ponds at either side of the site. And the landscape management plan will also be applied as outlined earlier. So turning to wildlife now, it's not considered there's a significant impact on wildlife. The appropriate surveys have been submitted, and there are no objections received from Natural England. They have been consulted on the revised plans, but have reiterated that they have no objections. The proposal therefore records the policy DP21 and the NPPF in that respect too. Similarly, there are no concerns regarding archaeology. The archaeologist has been consulted, including on the amended plans, and is happy that there's not an impact on any archaeology of significance. It's not considered there's an impact on the right of way. That was an objection raised by consultees. The right of way is located at this end of the site, and we walked along that site today, and it's clear that the development hasn't impinged upon that and has not affected the amenity of users of that footpath. It's well treed and well screened. There's only a minor glimpse of the car park through a small gap at that right of way, but apart from that, it's very well screened. There's a right of way crossing the field, and I showed you pictures of that earlier. That runs across the rear of the site, the rear boundary, and I showed you photographs of that, and subject to a bit of extra planting, there should not be a material visual impact from that footpath, and certainly no amenity concerns in that respect. Finally, in terms of other issues, enforcement issues in the past have been raised, certainly by objectors. You'll note from the report that this is considered an appropriate way to deal with the retrospective applications. No significant weight has been given to any potential established use on the site. The application has been judged on its planning merits and not giving weight to any potential lawful development that might have occurred. So it's being judged entirely on its planning merits, standing on its own 2 feet, basically. We're not giving weight to the fact that there may or may not be some lawful development that is immune from enforcement action. The whole lot's being considered in one go. An issue has also been raised in terms of deception of enforcement officers at the time when there was a complaint raised in the early 2000s or mid-2000s about the use of an area to the rear of the site, and an enforcement officer visited that site and was informed that the area was to be used for cattle pads. And as that was agriculture, no further action was taken. You'll note the allegation of potential deliberate deception there, but our opinion is that that does remain disputed and is certainly not proven. But in any case, it's not considered that that should weigh in any way against judging this application, as no reliance is placed on any possible lawfulness of any part of the scheme. The next point raised is about intentional unauthorised development, and a ministerial statement has been forwarded to us, which does put the view, and it is a categoric statement, that intentional unauthorised development is a material consideration when considering a planning application. The statement referred to greenbelt and unauthorised deceptive development as such, but we consider it applies to all development, not just development in the greenbelt. And from our point of view, again, we consider that that does not outweigh material consideration that the proposal should be supported on its planning merits, having regard to all the issues that I've gone through. So overall then, the recommendation is approval with the conditions as outlined in the committee report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harden. May I now call on Mr. Jim Beard to address the committee, please? You have 3 minutes, and a bell will go after two.
Good evening. My name is Jim Beard. I'm a finance director, chartered accountant, chartered director. Been involved in lots of moves of businesses, understand corporate governance, all that lot sort of stuff. I also understand and can prove acts of deceit here. It's been mentioned, but I'll mention it again. In 2005, an investigative planning inspector warned the owner, Mr. Blackwell, the development she witnessed did not have industrial use consent. He told her the development was for agricultural purposes. A statutory declaration from the owner, very recently, states, since 1999, neither my wife, myself, anyone residing at Knight's Farm has been involved in agriculture. This is a positive deception. I'll go ahead now and tell you about a few others. The owner was asked to complete prior approval forms at that time to progress with the agricultural scheme. He didn't. That's a covert deceit. Direct meats have not paid the higher levels of business rates on that property, which is deceiving the public purse. Public accounts show legal charges over Knight's Farm relating to loans from Barclays Bank. Last year, that was £764,000. No respectable bank is likely to advance such sums if they knew the planning permission had not been obtained. It is the owner's fiduciary duty to make his creditors aware that he had not established lawful use of that site. Not to do so would be deceit of those to those parties, deceiving a bank. The report to the committee states Direct Meats could not find suitable site. Well, its sister company, owned by the same people, same person, boasts newly acquired 30,000 square feet of secure CCTV monitored facilities on an industrial site just 3 miles away. He couldn't find anywhere. It also pleads, this report, that low margins prevent the move. Operating profits for the last 2 years were £1.2 million. And profit before tax was £856,000, and that's after the directors have taken their handsome remunerations. That period, just for those 2 years, they have paid £350,000 to themselves in dividends, the shareholders. And they say they can't afford to move. I have never seen such a lack of fiduciary duty and poor corporate governance in my career.
Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Mr. Wood, would you now come forward and address the committee? Thank you. Have your 2 minutes and a bell will go after. Sorry, you have 3 minutes and the bell will go after two.
I'm James Wood of Lambert Smith Hampton Planning and Development Consultants, representing a group of residents on Swan Street. The report to committee includes little context as to an unauthorised development since 2001. In the late 1990s, the site was open countryside with an agricultural dwelling and small barn used as a flower shop and tea room. This changed in the late 1990s to enable the small meat wholesale venture, ancillary to the agricultural holding, for a short period. In 2001, the condition restricting the use to a temporary period was relaxed, allowing for a tightly confined, small-scale wholesale meat venture. The consent remained highly conditioned, including hours of operation, floor space and vehicle movements. In 2001, the planning inspectorate was told that only 4 HGVs would visit the site a week and the business would employ 21 part-time and full-time staff. This is a benchmark against which the application should be assessed. The owner has positively misled the council in the past by providing misleading information, which further is considered on the balance of probabilities to have been deceitful. No lawful development certificate has been applied for, which would have allowed proper public scrutiny. In 2005, the applicant was visited by an enforcement officer. It was claimed ongoing works were permitted agricultural development undertaken as part of the applicant's agricultural business. The applicant then advised the council he had abandoned the project, avoiding further action, but continued regardless, despite warnings from the enforcement officer. The applicant's own staff have also clearly stated the land was actually being developed for industrial purposes when the enforcement officer visited. And now, by his own admission, the applicant claims he was not involved in agricultural activity in 1999. Combined, this can only lead to one reasonable conclusion. The council has been positively misled. The situation is similar to the case of Mr. Beasley, who represented to his council he was building an agricultural building, then retrospectively claimed it was a house all along. The court ruled in such cases time limits for taking enforcement do not apply. They applied the public policy principle that no one should benefit from their own deception, and the building had to be removed. The applicant claims that it was too costly to move. This should not be a planning consideration, as it was all due to the applicant not seeking planning permission in the first place. To residents, it seems as if the applicant would, if successful, be rewarded for deceiving the council, and residents will bear the cost of the illegal development through great harm to their amenity. In taking a decision, the council must, in our view, ignore the unauthorised development and treat the area as open countryside. They should also reflect that the planning inspector only narrowly released a site from being for temporary use in 2001. The current application would allow for six times as much floor space.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Martin Blackwell, please. Mr. Blackwell, you have your 3 minutes.
My name is Martin Blackwell, Managing Director of Direct Meats. We have worked very closely with your officers since the application was submitted, and I'm pleased that the application comes before you with a recommendation for approval. We have provided extensive information which demonstrates that the proposal has acceptable impact on the local area, and this is discussed in detail to your officer's report. As you will have seen from your visit, we are a professional and well-run business and have been successfully trading over the past 23 years from Swan Street Chapel. Planning officer has recommended conditions that I willingly comply with and I support. I very much want my business to stay in the village of Chapel where I live. Since the planning application process has started, I've noted the concern of large articulated lorries, and I have a plan in place as of January to have these types of deliveries made to a central cold store and our pallets consolidated onto one daily vehicle. Also, I do not want my business to be a hindrance to anybody else living nearby. Our community needs strong companies. In March 2019, the UK will leave the EU. None of us need uncertainty, neither do my staff. We need to be investing. Investment secures jobs, and more jobs brings other jobs to other businesses in the community. Colchester Borough Council and small villages have a responsibility to provide jobs for local people. Direct Meat brings in large revenues. £6 million of this is spent in the local economy each year in goods, services and payroll. We purchase from farms and businesses directly related to Colchester. We employ 115 staff who spend their hard-earned cash in the area every day. We pay a large amount of tax revenue. We support charities. We are heading up an environmental project of 1 million wild bumblebees on farm. This project is now being looked at by the Minister of Environment, Michael Gove. Direct Meat is on the shortlist for the Queen's Award for Innovation and Export. Direct Meat works with autistic teenagers. Direct Meat puts 4 to 5 teenagers who live in your Colchester Council area through our apprenticeship programme every year. This has all been possible from a company I started with a bank loan of £10,000 in 1995. We have had to evolve over the years to meet tough EU food legislation and employment law. It's been hard growing the business. We have grown the company to be a market leader in our chosen marketplace. We are the butchers to Gordon Ramsay, Jamie Oliver, Michelle Rue, Heston Blumenthal, Raymond Blanc, Cathay Pacific Airways and Cambridge Universities. I ask all of you to support my application so we can continue to be a successful organisation that the whole of Colchester Borough Council can be proud of, and so that Direct Meats can continue to do good in the community and it can support my staff. With respect, Mr. Chairman, the first speaker's comments about my income and profits is not correct. You can see our tax returns, and it's quite clearly within the public, and it's certainly not that.
very much, Mr. Blackwell. May I ask Steve Gilbert to come? Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. You have 3 minutes. 2 minutes.
My name is Steve Gilbert. I've lived in the village and was brought up here, and I've worked at Direct Meats for 18 years. I still remember when I first applied for a job here. I was 15 and wanting weekend work for extra pocket money. Chapel Village offers very few employment opportunities for people like me. Direct Meats gave me that opportunity, not just a job, but over the years I've been put through various training courses. I've worked my way up from making teas, cleaning the floors, to being the shift manager. I've recently completed and qualified at level 7 in executive management and now looking at options to top that up to an MBA, something that simply would not have been possible or happened had it not been for the work I do here at Direct Meats. Direct Meats has employed and continues to employ local people that I know and grew up with, people living down my street and surrounding areas. I'm not alone in having been given the opportunity to progress to a management role and gain the training whilst employed. Right now, several of the up-and-coming as well as existing managers are being put through leadership courses in partnership with Cultures Institute. Staff that did not come away from school with qualifications are having the opportunity to go back and achieve functioning skills qualifications in maths and English, again funded by Direct Meats in partnership with the Institute. What would have happened to these people otherwise? I believe Direct Meats takes a social responsibility in providing employment and opportunities for self-development for people where I live very seriously. Direct Meats has a dedicated in-house butchery apprenticeship scheme. I know people in Chapel that have been put through this course and qualified. They now have a job and a skilled trade forever. Some of these people, I truly believe, would not have had the same chance had they been living somewhere else. Over the years, Direct Meats has supported families in the community, including both my sister and brother. Everyone I know that lives locally and works for Direct Meats speaks enthusiastically about the company. Because it is local, they are proud, and we feel we are doing something that is worthwhile. As a manager, I've had staff ask me personally about their future, especially, are we still going to be here? These are people here whose livelihoods depend on opportunities existing in the areas where we live. I believe bringing employment back to where people live should be celebrated and applauded for the contribution it makes to the local people and the community. Myself, neighbours and friends are very concerned that after all the good things Direct Meats has done to support and employ local youngsters, our jobs are now being jeopardised.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, Madam Chairman, councillors, thank you for allowing me to speak. You will note I called in this first of a series of similar applications some 2.5 years ago. The reason for this delay is that more and more unauthorised development was identified by the enforcement team or brought to the attention of the council, and required additional consultations. Needless to say, the parish council and residents have been considerably frustrated by this process, particularly because of the perceived unregulated environmental effects generated by the business. Planning history records that a small retail development was approved, which diversified the original small farm business. This has grown with no planning permissions into a substantial business employing 115 people. As one of the ward councillors, I have to consider the interests of all residents and businesses. Direct Meats is a successful business and a significant employer in the rural area. However, not the only one. Within 2 miles is a substantial business park at Wakes Hall Business Centre, which houses 19 businesses providing numerous jobs, all in redundant farm buildings. The planning system is there to balance the need for domestic and commercial developments against their environmental impact. Thus, we have a local plan with policies to do just that. In a case like this, where development was carried out without permission, that must be ignored, and the application must be determined on the basis of current national and local policies. I thank Mr. Harden for his comprehensive report. Unfortunately, I do not have time to consider all the detailed matters which I would like, so we'll stick to the main principles. Mr. Harden states that the application complies with much of the key policies DP9 and CE1, and on balance, there are material, social, and economic factors that outweigh the departure from policy. Councillors, you will note I emphasise on balance. As a veteran of the Planning Committee, I see this as an indication that the recommendation is not clear-cut, but perhaps open to refusal. I hope to show that you should indeed choose to refuse the application. The report quotes the revised NPPF, which encourages businesses in rural areas. However, the framework's first principle is that there is a presumption in favour of sustainable development. This, to me, is the key. If the application had come in for 3 new factories and support facilities of some 2,360 square metres, plus hard standing of 2,979 square metres, including parking for 67 vehicles, 24 hours operation with daily deliveries and collections by heavy commercial vehicles, all in this country area and on this poor unclassified road, would Knight's Farm be considered a sustainable location? Policy DP9 requires new commercial development in rural areas to be small scale. Thus, the proposal fails this test, hence the recommendation is seen as a departure from policy. I would argue that this phase, small scale, is crucial to sustainable commercial development in rural areas. And if this business is not considered small scale, it would be only acceptable in a highly sustainable location, one perhaps with direct access onto a classified road, as is Wakes Hall Business Centre. From Knight's Farm, heavy vehicles constantly use the very poor road down to Chapel, where it passes through a conservation area, a one-way chicane, and a narrow street passing the village school, and where there is no footpath. Not for the first time, I do not understand highways not objecting to this application. Councillors, I ask you to refuse this application based on failure to comply with policy DP9, and the material considerations do not outweigh this because the location is unsustainable and fails the basic test of the framework. I also propose that the applicant is given 1 year to find an alternative location before enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Chillingworth. And now, Councillor Christopher Arnold.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. I'm here tonight sort of in the first instance because Councillor Chillingworth, who has lived with this, indeed is a Chapel resident for as long as he's been a councillor. I've only been with it since 2016 when the ward boundaries changed, but at that point I started being lobbied by residents and I started looking at what was going on. And whilst Councillor Chillingworth has led, I've taken a considerable interest. I just want to pick up on what DP9 actually says, our policy DP9. Employment development proposals within the countryside outside of designated local employment zones must contribute to the local rural economy. Well, that's okay. We've heard that it does from the second speaker in favour, and I'm not insensitive to the points that were made there, and help sustain rural communities. Well, yes, that too. The proposed use should be of a small scale that does not harm the rural character of the area, either by the nature and level of activity, and here's the important bit in brackets, including the amount of additional traffic generation on rural roads, or any other detrimental effects such as noise and pollution. Section B then, which deals with the extension of existing rural employment buildings, goes on to say, proposals will only be supported where these are limited to expansion plans which are essential to the operation of the established business. Well, we have seen tonight, in flipping between those two aerial shots, the expansion that has taken place on that site, which would need, in order to satisfy that policy which I've just read out, an expansion that was necessary to support the existing business, not constitute new business. And the policy is quite clear that if it's going to be new business, which it was, because we've heard that the nature of the business that was granted permission there bears little relation to what's going on there today. New business has to be in a fully sustainable area and in an established employment zone, preferably. Now, we've heard that the Highway Authority has caused some consternation because they haven't objected to it, but Councillor Higgins in particular, who chaired this meeting when the Bunting application went through, and that's another application that had recommendation for permission from officers which members turned down and which was subsequently a decision held defended at appeal. In Natural England made clear that there is the Highway Authority view of whether the road network is adequate, and there is a wider view which this authority is entitled to take on the impact of traffic on the locality. And when we see the picture of the enormous lorry going past the school in that conservation area, I think, yes, you could reduce the number of lorries, but what is clear is that you can't take them away completely. For this business to operate in this location as it is at the moment, albeit with a reduced servicing by heavy goods vehicles, there is a massive traffic impact, and the size of the car parks alone informs the view that we should take of how much impact this business has on the wider countryside. Those are not all going to be local residents. Some of them will be coming a very long way away to this rural location. They will be having an impact on the countryside, and it's very beautiful countryside in the Colne Valley. And that's exactly what this policy, DP9, is all about, and it's exactly what the MPPF policy hangs on as well. It's about whether you can do something like this in a rural location and actually have only a sustainable impact on the countryside. And I think, I mean, members will have seen it this afternoon. An operation this size, I welcome the fact that we've got this activity in the borough, and I welcome the fact that it's successful. But if we were to, as Councillor Chillingworth has said, if we got the application in now to do this on the site as it was when the permitted activity was going on, we would look at it and say no. And the fact that it is there now doesn't constitute a material planning consideration that should make us change our mind. We have to pretend that it's not there now and start as it should be and say, well, are we going to permit that expansion? And as far as sustainability is concerned, the impact on the countryside, I'm clear that we should be saying, no, it doesn't. DP9 is absolutely clear. Proposals will only be supported in this case where it's limited to the expansion plans which are essential to the operation of the established business. This goes far, far beyond that. And I've finished by stressing that we don't want to shut it down overnight. What we want to do is actually say, we'll help. Please find somewhere else, apply for permission for your activities somewhere else, and then we'll be pleased to deal with that planning application. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Councillor Arnold. Before I ask Mr. Harden to comment, if he has any comments on what we've heard from the speakers, we have our Environment Protection Officer with us, David Martin, and now perhaps would be a good time to ask Mr. Martin to address the committee.
Yes, hello. I'm David Martin, Environmental Protection Officer for Colchester Borough Council. Environmental Protection have received very few complaints concerning this site. Therefore, we would have no objection to the proposed retrospective planning application being granted, provided the conditions are met. Firstly, the site boundary noise level condition, the industrial processes control of odour and fumes condition, and the food premises control of fumes and odour, and the light pollution conditions are met. So that's it, thank you. Unless there's any questions.
Is that all you wish to say at this moment?
Yes, that is, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin.
Yes, Chairman, I can make a few additional comments. Obviously, the comments put forward cover objections and support, and the objections put forward have essentially been covered in my presentation and in my committee report. A lot of attention is put to policy DP9, which is rightfully so, because that's a key policy for employment in the countryside. And we did advertise the proposal as a departure to part of that policy in terms of the small-scale aspect. And the policy said, proposed use should be a small-scale, does not harm the rural character of the area by nature, level activity, amount of additional traffic. So that's the bit where we consider it is a bit beyond that policy because we're not deeming it as small-scale. And nevertheless, in our view, we don't think there is a significant impact on the rural character of the area. We've outlined the vehicle movements are going to be controlled. There is a right to use that highway. There's going to be articulated lorry controls, numbers, monitoring. So no objections from the Highways Authority. So we don't feel we can justify a refusal on the grounds of the actual traffic generation on the rural roads. The site is not far from key roads, the A12 and the A roads as well. So it's not like it's right out in the middle of nowhere. In that respect, it is relatively sustainable because you don't have to go very far to get to these main roads. There are other businesses on that road, as we saw when we went past, including a business centre, and there's another a car centre. And all of these utilise the road, you know, with some of them quite heavy vehicles. So Knights Farm is not alone in that respect. And the percentage of use of those roads is relatively low. The other criteria we consider is met, and that's quite a long list of criteria, and I've outlined that in the report, that consider that criteria is met. And indeed, if the application was refused, I would say you're departing more from policy DP9 than if you would approve it. So in that respect, there is support from that. There's also support in the paragraph 4.24, which relates to DP9, and I'll just reiterate that. It's in your report, but essentially it says there are a number of well-established employment sites in the rural parts of the borough where some important local companies are located. Companies are often seeking to expand their operations within the site, and this can be more appropriate than the company seeking alternative premises outside of the borough in order to retain the economic and social benefits which can arise from companies located in rural areas. It will be beneficial for applications to expand existing operations to be supported by a business plan depending on the scale of the development proposed. So in terms of that paragraph, that identifies how it can be important to allow established employment sites to expand. And I would say in terms of the national planning policy framework, there is key support for rural businesses in rural areas. That is more up to date than the local plan. So we do need to consider that and give that substantial weight. I'll just cover a few other points. I've covered the issues about the deception in my presentation and in the report, and the enforcement issues as well. So I would just be repeating myself if I went through that again. Let's see if there are other issues that I need to add to. We are considering it from all angles. We're considering it in terms of if it came in as the whole lot in one go rather than retrospective. We're also considering it in terms of what's there. Is it causing harm to the environment? Economic development. So all angles have been considered, and all the comments received from consultees have been looked at very closely, and we consider they've been addressed in the conditions. So at this stage, I don't think I can add much more in that respect.
Mr. Harden. Mr. Cairns.
Thank you, Chair. I'd really like to just briefly build on what Mr. Harden has said with regard to the current and the most recent iteration of the National Planning Policy Framework at paragraph 83, which is rather more permissive in its approach to rural business than DP9, in terms of it states planning policies and decisions should enable the sustainable growth and expansion of all types of business, so it doesn't refer to scale, as does DP9 in rural areas, both through the conversion of existing buildings and well-designed new buildings. The policy, the framework goes on at paragraph 84 to state planning policies and decisions should recognise that sites to meet local business and community needs in rural areas may have to be found adjacent to or beyond existing settlements and in locations that are not well served by public transport. It goes on to say, in these circumstances, it will be important to ensure that the development is sensitive to the surroundings, does not have an unacceptable impact on local roads, and exploits opportunities to make the location more sustainable, for example, by improving scope for access on foot, cycling or public transport. In this instance, Chair, reference has been made to the relatively low contribution of HGVs to the local highway network. I think it's less than 25% is attributable to this particular operation. And in terms of sustainability, you'll see from the conditions that a travel plan is proposed. And that clearly could encourage more sustainable modes of transport for employees to access the site. Inevitably, this sort of processing and distribution business involves exactly that, the use of the transport network to distribute the products far afield. And as we've heard, these products are distributed as far as London and all over the place. So in terms of the sustainability of the location, it is almost inevitable that it is going to involve distribution network vehicles. Reference was made to a comparison with Hawksley Park, which was obviously recommended for approval and was refused by this committee and rejected on appeal. There is quite a considerable difference between the two proposals that involve huge numbers of trips by private cars, whereas this actually is quite a different sort of business. So I don't think the two issues should be conflated. They are very different in terms of the nature of the two business enterprises. Thank you, Chair. In addition, in terms of landscape impacts and recognising the intrinsic character of the countryside, I would hope that members took advantage of the site visit to gain an impression of the overall visual impact of the business, which is extremely limited. The buildings are quite low in their profile and akin to the sort of agricultural buildings which one frequently encounters in the countryside. So members will make up their own mind whether it harms the intrinsic character of that piece of countryside. Thank you for listening to those points, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cairns. Thank you. Do we have... Has anyone indicated to speak?
Microphone, please, Chairman. Thank you very much. We did go on a site visit today, and apart from being beautiful weather, we did see the whole site. We walked around it, we walked along the footpath, and we looked at it. And so a couple of observations, Madam Chairman. One thing is we didn't hear much noise, nor did we smell much smell. And most of us went to the Fairfield Crisps, so we did smell quite a lot of odours around there. So from that point of view, the whole scheme seems to be quite clear from just general observations of being in the countryside. Now, I understand the residents' concerns about the number of HGVs and number of vehicles, but actually the Planning Permission of 1995 and I think 2001 also did allow for HGVs on the site. So it's not something new. It's something that's been going on for about 15, 16 years. The other thing that I would like to say is that times have moved on. They have now applied for the retrospective planning permission. It is a good business, it seems to me. It is quite clear. The site was clean, as I said, on it. Now, we, on the whole, as a committee, don't like retrospective planning things, because if it had been come to us as the original application, we would have put probably even more conditions that are being put on now. But the one advantage of seeing it in its present state is that you can see where some of the pitfalls might be. And for me personally on the site, I didn't see that many pitfalls. Now, I understand there is a transport plan in place. I think one thing maybe we could tighten it is that when they do have their main depot where they're going to get the meat and then come to the site, is they don't travel during the school coming and going, coming out hours, because that would then protect that piece of road. But it is a national road. Any transport vehicle can go on it. And since 2001 to 2018, everywhere's got a lot more traffic. So I'm sure lots of HGVs cut through there because they don't want to spend time on the 120 or the A12 or what have you. So at the moment, Madam Chairman, those are my comments.
Thank you, Councillor Higgins. Councillor Barton.
Thank you. Oh, surprised me, I didn't actually put my hand up, but never mind. Yes, I'm another one that's not really a fan of retrospective planning, but we have been told that we must look at this as a new application as such. And like Councillor Higgins, when we went on the site visit, I was actually pretty impressed that there was sort of no visual impact on the area from the buildings themselves. The screening was good, and we went along the public footpath. We could not see the buildings from the public footpath, so the screening is effective. The only area where it wasn't particularly good was at the back, and I believe the officer said that there's a plan in place for additional landscaping to remedy that situation. If you could just confirm that. Ms. Harden, I think you said there was...
Well, there'll be a condition to ensure that, yes, in the landscape management plan.
Because that was the only obvious part where you could see the buildings. So that was one thing. There was adequate staff parking, but we were discussing the possibility that maybe the company could run a minibus for employees, perhaps, to mitigate against the traffic coming and going from the site. That was a possible condition, possible consideration. But at the end of the day, it's a case of balancing and looking at the number of people employed in the area, 117, that's a significant employer in a rural area. And I think that's given a lot of opportunities to young people in the village to actually have a career or have employment. So the only other thing was the noise from the plant. You did show us the plant, those particular instruments, whatever, in the corner, and said there might be a condition there about screening or sound barrier or whatever to just mitigate against that. So they were just my thoughts at the moment. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Barton. Yeah. Councillor Jarvis.
Thank you, Chair. I've also said in previous committee meetings here regarding retrospective applications, not a great fan at all. But this one is in extremis, isn't it? It's quite extraordinary that Mr. Blackwell seems to have treated planning approval in a very cavalier fashion, and if not deceitful, almost contemptible, I would say. It's not good. It's not. If we're going to have regulations and if we can have local plans, we should be there to make sure that they are adhered to and, where necessary, to enforce them. So I would say on this, looking at this, I congratulate Mr. Blackwell in terms of running a successful business. We all want that to happen in Colchester, both in urban and rural areas. Employment is good, but this has had an impact on the rural area. It is no longer a small-scale development. This is a large-scale development, and if it was presented to us at the very beginning, I don't think we would have approved it on this size. We talk about conditions being placed on if we were to give it approval. How much faith do you have in those conditions being adhered to? Again, because of the track record that we've seen, it's not good. I would think that there's plenty of employment land around Colchester where this could be relocated. We don't have to talk about people being unemployed or what have you. There's a transition period of 1 or 2 years. Employment would still be available. It would be in a more sustainable area. We wouldn't have the problems with the HGV on that particular road. But I think it is the whole principle of having policies and regulations which we can control and that are respected, and if there need to be variances, we can judge them on that variance. But this is a winding up operation to do, trying to pull together all the missed opportunities in the past to put this on a correct footing. And frankly, I cannot support this application.
Thank you, Mr. Jarvis. Do we have any other speakers? Any other comments?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for allowing the sub on the field. It's a very difficult one, this one. The site visit was interesting today. I would agree with some of the comments that actually the visual impact wasn't particularly major. It does seem to be a well-run business, and I don't actually think how much money it makes is relevant to planning. You know, if you're making lots of money, good luck to you. However, I think I am concerned about the comments about planning infringement and deception. I think we established, our officer gave us the advice that if there has been intentional deception, then that is a material consideration. I know he said that it may not outweigh others, but it is something, if we feel that there has been deception, then it is something we have to consider. It's not somebody putting a conservatory on the back of their house a bit too large. This is a huge percentage increase on what was originally there and the original planning permission. I can also understand why residents may be sceptical that however many planning conditions we put on it, that they will be enforced. If you think back that this was first investigated in 2005, we have to be honest and say that our enforcement on this has been woeful or non-existent. That's a simple fact. We've already conceded it's not small scale, and it's. I would like perhaps a little bit more of a clarification on DP9 when the councillor brought up the subject as to whether it is an expansion of an existing business or whether this is a new business. It seems to be a little bit debatable when you look at the original planning permission from 2001 as exactly what it was for. It seemed to mention tea shops and things, but there's obviously no tea shop there, which has been expanded. I'm going to perhaps listen to what some of the other councillors say, but at the moment, I am slightly sceptical about this, that it may well bring our planning methods into somewhat disrepute, and I think the public may really ask whether following the planning system and being good and applying for planning permission is really worth it.
Mr. Harden, can you comment on that issue of whether it's new business or existing business?
Yes, Chairman. In my opinion, it's an expansion of an existing business. There was a previous consent relating to a wholesale meat business, the 1999-1755 application, and that has basically been expanded, unauthorised, as we all know, and retrospectively, but it is an expansion of that business, essentially.
Thank you very much. Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I have three questions to raise. I'm sure they're easily answered. The first one I've got is on the whether it's possible to restrict lorry numbers, because obviously the impact will be minimised by the number of lorries. If that is a condition already in here, and what would that be like, and how would it be monitored? You've already mentioned the register or the log. Does that get checked on an occasional basis? That's my first question. My second question, Chair, is on the some of the comments I read in here was about the water being contaminated with ammonia or something along the way I saw. Now, I just don't know whether it's possible under the drainage, the suds or the notes there, whether you can add a periodical check. I don't want to cause the owner any large-scale expense on causing the checks to be done, but is it possible to add periodical checks by the owner on the validity of the make sure there's no further contamination? Because for me, doing it after the event is always worse because it's already happened by then. But if a check very early on, a quarterly check or something like that happens, then you can make sure that we don't cause damage to the environment. Because to me, that site is okay, it is what it is, but it's the impact it has. And I think to a water course or to an outlet, I'm sure even the landowner and the business owner wouldn't want that to happen. And I just wonder whether there's any mitigation or conditioning put on there to ask for that. And the last one is about the trees. Again, it's about impact, and it's already been mentioned, and I looked at it on Google Maps, drove by it, and I can see that, you know, it's well covered. There's you know, it's hard, you can hardly get it until you're on top of it. But for me, how do you protect that in future? Because again, like other speakers, I'm not a fan of retrospective planning applications, but for me, how do we protect those trees from being felled, cut, altered in such a way in future to further expand the site? Now, TPOs, I mean, is it something that you can add at this stage or recommend at this stage, or is that another channel through the council that is not through planning? So those are my three questions, Chair. I hope they're relevant for you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Chair. Universally in agreement with all others on the committee, I dislike retrospective planning applications for fairly obvious reasons. However, having also attended the site visit, I was struck that this is a well-run business, well-screened, with little obvious impact to the surrounding area. I also feel that the idea of relocation elsewhere is, in a commercial sense, frankly unrealistic and could be quite destructive for business. As I say, in terms of impact, I mean, I noticed from Google Maps that is it the Barron's business further down the road is in fact larger in size than Direct Meats. So there are quite a number of sites there. More importantly, an issue has been made over the deception or otherwise of the applicant. Frankly, I think it is unfair and unreasonable to compare this particular case with the rather egregious activities of Mr. Beasley in this Wellin case. I think that the two are not comparable whatsoever. Beasley did definitely set, or has been found to have set out to deceive, and I'm not entirely convinced that this has been proved in this particular case. But probably the more important issue in my mind is the National Planning Policy Framework. Paragraph, I think it's 83 that Mr. Cairns quoted. The world moves on, and businesses are expected or may be allowed to expand in rural areas, and the scale is not limited to simply being small anymore. And it is for that reason that I will support the application. Thank you.
Very much, Councillor Liddy. Councillor Flores.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose I just want to make a comment, really. What concerns me is that planning officers have rightly put conditions in place if the permission is approved, but how can the council have any confidence that the company will take any notice whatsoever of these conditions when they haven't apparently in the past? I grew up just down the road from the site, and I regularly cycle between Mark's Tay and Chapel, and HGVs on that road are positively dangerous, especially if you're on a bike. There's no footpath. It's not a pleasant experience being overtaken by an HGV on that lane. It was said that considerable time was spent monitoring the traffic. And if we could just be told how long was spent monitoring the HGV traffic, or was, to get a a clear average on this HGV, because I've seen photographs taken by local resident where there seem to be a lot more HGV, you know, really large HGVs turning into the site than seems to be indicated in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Harden, Councillor Higgins, you wanted to say something?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I was just going to say a couple of comments. We have the list of material planning considerations at the back of our agenda, and one of them, which is not a material planning, is the identity of the applicant, their character, previous history or possible motives. And whilst I've got the floor, please, Madam Chairman, I'd like to propose the motion that we accept the officer's recommendation with all the conditions and the extra bits that we've added on. Thank you.
Do we have a seconder for that, Councillor? One or two comments I have. I feel we have been put in a very invidious position, being asked to approve an application with such a difficult past. Quite clearly, I believe it has been shown that the applicant knew perfectly well what he was doing. And what concerns me is the message we will be sending to future applicants. Because if this is approved, how can we not approve every other retrospective application that comes before us? It will make it extremely difficult. No mention has been made about the 24/7 operation. And no planning permission, I understand, was given for that. I would like to know if that's reasonable and, on balance, ought this business be allowed to work 24/7? I also think in regard to the heavy goods vehicles, it wasn't so much the HGVs, it was the articulated lorries that were causing the major concern, and I understand those numbers have been reduced or will be reduced under the conditions. There are 23 conditions, all being required to be completed within 2 months. I wonder whether that is doable. And again, as has been mentioned, I wonder whether the applicant will actually comply with these conditions in the time frame. So I am really concerned about this application. At the moment, I'm not sure where my vote is going at the moment, but I am very concerned about it. So perhaps, Mr. Harden, are you able to comment on the various aspects that have been made?
Yes, Chairman. Firstly, there was a comment about enforcement being woeful. I think the issue was essentially that whilst it was raised in the mid-2000s, then everything went quiet after that, and it was only when the applicant came in for discussions about further development that the enforcement officer said, hang on, what's all this? And then that's when everything came to light and the application was asked for, essentially. So it wasn't short of sort of having to have been in the site before, then enforcement were not aware of any concerns in that respect. I think that was exacerbated by the fact that the site is sort of tucked away behind planting which had grown up, and then suddenly the cat was out of the bag and enforcement were on it to take the action. But before then, things were sort of bubbling under the surface as such. Yes, another point was made about lorry numbers. There will be the conditions about lorry numbers, and we're particularly concerned about keeping articulated lorry numbers down.
So there will be a condition there, and those conditions are deemed to be enforceable. In terms of tree retention, the landscape management plan would retain the trees on the site and also encourage more planting as well where necessary. There was another point about not taking notice of conditions. I can see why there is concern about in the past conditions haven't been complied with. I think perhaps a monitoring regime can be set up in terms of enforcement, looking at the site at a certain periods, perhaps on some sort of monthly basis or two monthly basis, three monthly basis, that sort of thing, because I think the site is obviously much more high profile now, and it's certainly right in the public domain, and there needs to be procedures to cover that, I think. But I think that is achievable subject to, you know, an enforcement monitoring program. There's also reference to the 24/7 operation. I think for a business like this, it will be essential to allow that. Otherwise, there won't be the delivery times met to, you know, the restaurants that it serves. So I can't see that we can curtail those hours and let the business continue. We have looked at that closely. It's worth noting that in terms of numbers of movements, the majority are not, you know, late at night as such or early, but there are some, as you can see from the details in the report, there are some movements there. Again, I use the term on balance. That's considered appropriate in terms of amenity. The applicant does have the right to use that road network at all times. No objections from Environmental Health in that respect. And then in terms of the reference you made about the 2 months put on the conditions, I think you'll see that that's not entirely accurate. The conditions have been worded so that they should be able to be complied with. A lot of the conditions do start off within 2 months. Details should be submitted. But then in the next part of the conditions, they say, then following approval of those details, there's a further period of time to then comply. So it's not just saying submit, comply within 2 months, it's saying submit within 2 months, for example, and then with a further period of 2 or 3 months as per condition, those details then need to be complied with. So there was a lot of thought put into those timescales, and the view is that they are achievable. Some have put 2 months, comply with 2 months, others submit within 1 month, comply, etc. So those timescales are considered to be achievable. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Harden. Councillor Liddy again.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to point out that although we are a quasi-judicial body, we're not a court of law, and we're not here to establish or otherwise someone's mens rea or guilty intention of any sort of deception. So I just wanted to make that point, if you could remember that, please.
I appreciate that, Councillor Liddy, but it's inevitable that one will wonder. Councillor Flores.
Sorry, could I just ask again, over what period were the HDVs monitored over, please?
You'll see that in the report there is reference to a daily assessment in terms of number of vehicles. So that was the period they were monitored, and it was noted in the report that at that time no articulated vehicles were noticed going into the site, but then the transport assessor then looked back at the logs recorded by the company, and it was clear that there were some HGV lorries visiting the site, hence the requirement for the conditions, basically.
So one day?
Yeah.
Councillor Harris.
Thank you, Chair. I think one bit, maybe is the way I said it, but about the water course and the ammonia, I did mention that, and I don't know whether it's Environmental Health that comments or plan, but really my question still stands and hasn't been answered about whether it's reasonable to accept the business owner to monitor their own output into that at a periodical basis. If it is, Is it reasonable to expect that, and how much does it cost, that sort of argument?
Yes, Councillor Harris. We have had in the past problems with crowd jesters and things, and we have put conditions on where we have access to their logs to make sure that the system is being maintained and looked after as it should be. And if it is maintained and looked after as it should be, there shouldn't be a problem. But the actual bottom line, the pollution of the waterway, would be an Environment Agency issue rather than us. But we do kind of overlap a little bit there, and we could do that if necessary.
We have no further speakers. We have a proposal on the table. Is there a contrary proposal? I totally agree with everybody that the site was well maintained, it looked fine, and it's an important employment area. It was so quiet today, I sort of cannot imagine that is a normal day of business carried on in that place, but we have to go with what we saw. So we must now go to the vote. We have a proposal to approve with all the conditions, and I wonder if we can add the further condition of the monthly or two monthly monitoring. Would that suit? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, can we just seek some clarification from our Environmental Protection colleague with regard to how that's been handled elsewhere in terms of the nature of the log? Presumably the applicants have to maintain that log and provide it on a periodic basis for agreement by the Environmental Protection Service.
Yes, they would have to maintain that log and provide it for us.
So, Chair, I think we can add in a further condition, obviously the wording we can devise for you, but basically requiring the applicant to maintain a log of the performance of the Clargister processing plant and report it periodically, those results for scrutiny to the Environmental Protection team to make sure that no pollution is created by that.
Sorry, Chairman, were you also referring to a monthly log of the other issues in relation to enforcement? Was it just the water?
It was the log for the vehicles and the water. And also, there's lighting that needs to be taken down and redone. So really, it's a monitoring of all the conditions that they will be complied with and are being monitored and therefore scrutinised. Martin.
To reiterate on what I said earlier, the Environment Agency, not us, would monitor the water. We don't have the expertise or the equipment. As what we would monitor is the maintenance programme and making sure that the Clargester is being maintained and run properly.
Okay. Mr. Cairns?
Thank you, Chair. It seems to me that the points you're raising really relate to the monitoring conditions by the Council's Enforcement Service. And I think what we will have to do is to set up, if members are so minded to approve the application, a periodic monitoring of the site to ensure compliance with the conditions is actually taking place. Clearly, we're acutely aware of the site history and do not wish to see any breach of conditions occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Cairns. No other comments to be made? Then we must go to the vote. So all those in favour?
Chairman, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in favour.
All those against?
Chairman, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 against. one abstention, Chairman.
Thank you.
That's approved. 5 voted for, 4 voted against, and there's one abstention, Chairman.
Has been approved, and that concludes our committee for this evening. Thank you very much, members, and thank you very much for the patience of our residents.